From building a business we're talking about to creating best-in-class client experiences, we're here to explore what it takes to make sure you're top of mind and get the referral every time. Join me as I interview some of the most innovative and inspiring business owners in the online space and discover how you can create more opportunities to ensure your clients are thrilled with your work and make you the obvious choice to send their friends to. It's time to stop going it alone and start transforming your star power into staying power. I'm Dusty Arab, and you're listening to Referral Worthy. Let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Referral Worthy. My name is Dusty. I'm your host, and I am thrilled to be here with Samara Bay today. Samara is a best-selling author, a speaking coach, and a plethora of other things that we are going to discuss on the call, actually, because your iteration has just been so incredible to watch, like, since we met in New York a while back.
I remember that. I had, like, laryngitis and was, like, almost not talking that weekend. I was like, Dusty, nice to meet you. Like, I'd had, like, the roughest rock star night that I was really just sick and trying to, you know, push through.
Oh, my God. I've absolutely been there. I feel like every time I go to a conference anymore, I end up either with, like, I come back sick or, like, not talking because, like, I just all talked out, like, while the thing was happening. So let's start right at the beginning, though. Tell me about the current iteration of your business, and then we can jump off from there.
Ooh, do you want me to do it in, like, reverse chronological order?
This is great.
So I am a consultant who gets hired by big companies to come in and work with their leaders or their rising leaders, so one-on-one or in groups, to level up their public speaking. And this also takes the form of, like, obviously me speaking on stages and that kind of thing. And sometimes doing stuff in nonprofit world, in arts world, in activism world, you know, involved with, like, women running for office and trying to save the world, you know, that sort of thing. And emerged out of this book of mine that came out about 2 years ago, and learning over those 2 years what form my world was supposed to take, like what this business is, and how best I could serve folks, and like what my own messy and really, like, sort of playful inner journey has been around scaling, whether or not to. And then before that, because I enjoy reverse chronological order, I was a dialect coach in Hollywood. So I'm based in Los Angeles, and I have this background, as I like to say, I've told a lot of movie stars what to do with their tongues, which is accurate, but was never the full story. You know, dialect coaching is this really niche thing in the acting world where you help actors either who have an English as a second language, you know, sort of language barrier, sound as clear as possible, often because the producers and the director are worried, or helping anyone put on a fresh accent that matches the role that they've been cast in, which, as you can imagine, is sort of like nerdy, down the rabbit hole research on linguistics and anthropology and, like, really trying to get it right for the sake of the character. And inside of coaching those actors was the seeds for what has become the tree of my current business. Although, of course, I couldn't really have known at the time. But the reality is that when I was coaching actors and we were working on the minutia of vowels and consonant and, like, the musicality of spoken English, which those of us for whom English is our first language maybe take for granted, working on that was always about helping my client, helping this human across from me with a nervous system and a history, introduce something new into their body, into their mouth, into their thought process that could ultimately feel authentic. Like, what is that? What is that? How do we do that? How do our nervous systems do that? How does our spirit do that? How do we breathe enough to, like, allow that kind of change to happen and then still show up, in their case, with a camera 3 inches from their face, seeming enough like a human that we buy it on the other end?
Oh, my God. I could just listen to you monologue for days. Like, honestly, for anyone who hasn't read Samara's book, by the way, it's called Permission to Speak. And the year it came out, it was, like, one of the top three books that I read, like, across the entire year. Like, really, it is so exquisitely written. The amount of thought that went into it, like, it's so well done. And your voice, too, like,
it really feels exactly like the way you're speaking now, just in so many ways. Like, it feels like, even though we're not close or anything, like, I mean, I only met you once when your voice wasn't, you know, exactly your voice, which is so funny. But really, like, it feels like I'm sitting down to talk to an old friend, because I've read your book a couple of times now. And like, the way that you communicate so many of these ideas in the book as well is just like phenomenal to me. Like, I feel like you're one of the folks who like set the standard for the kind of book I want to write someday. Like,
I mean, I'm very moved by what you're saying. Very, very kind. I was just telling Dusty right before we hit record that my book is in the process of getting reprinted. And so I have the opportunity to go in and make a few tiny, 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 tiny changes. And I'm going to just tell you guys, because I have you right now, and why not, that A, I have like no changes I want to make, which 3 years out, I just want to like time out. What? I'm so proud of myself. Of course, I have updates because the world is worlded, but unfortunately, reprints do not allow for that level of like change in the page count, frankly.
Right.
But in terms of like errors to fix, there weren't any. And I'm so proud of myself and of my, you know, obviously my team, my editor is amazing. But the other thing is updating my bio and the thing like updating the inside cover and like trying to think through what I've learned about the book and about myself in these few years and really having that be reflected. It really helps to hear people say what you just said. So thank you.
Oh, of course. Of course. And I don't say it lightly. I mean, I read a lot of nonfiction. I work with a lot of authors like to, and I think that really does speak for itself, like to have the opportunity to change things and feel like, nope, actually, I did it right the fucking first time. Like, that's the best thing that you could be experiencing a couple years after.
It's funny, too, because there's like still, now I feel like I have to caveat. So this is because you guys are getting like the real I'm in it. Like, I'm literally pressing send after this interview back to my editor and like locking it. I definitely have I still have a little bit of a like vulnerability hangover on a few lines that feel particularly earnest, or what we might call today cringe. And I am just lovingly coaching myself, holding myself as I would anyone else, to be like, that's okay. You are allowed to be cheesy sometimes if it comes straight from your soul.
Right.
You go in and like make it sound more like unbothered and blasé. Like, no, that's not me.
No, you give a shit. So you're going to be cringe. Like, that's just how it goes. Like, if anything, cringe is the goal.
Cringe is the goal. Yep. Yep.
I am cringe, but I am free. I stole that from some delightful Gen Zer somewhere, but it's made the rounds on the internets now. So it's
really interesting. Okay, well, I'm working on a project on cringe, so this is very interesting to me. But thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So your career right now is at such an interesting place, too, because you're stepping into politics.
I'm hesitating because in a way I always have. And as a how do I put this? As a business move, it's the opposite of what I'm doing. The political stuff I learned many years ago, at least from my angle, from the way that I approach it and from the people I know, it inevitably is my activism work. It's not right. Part of the business.
Right.
It's only, quote unquote, part of the business in so much as like that is also an audience I'm speaking to and I care about very much. Right. But I, in a way, the reason I hesitated when you say I'm getting into politics is that in a way, what got me out of the Hollywood only space and into the larger space of, you know, I joke people as though actors aren't people, but you know what I mean, is that I got roped into coaching women who are running for office in the 2018 midterms. And that had a big impact on my life, helped me clarify that some of that work that I was talking about earlier that I was doing with actors was actually applicable to, as I say, people, and that it was not just applicable, but like possibly extremely useful in this moment, in that moment, and also in this moment, to help people find their voice when they have historically discounted how they sound.
Right.
But it, maybe you mean that I was getting involved in possibly running for office, and I did do some training, mm-hmm. and I did really seriously consider it, and I got trained through the Emerge training program in California, which is amazing. There's also Emerge America, which I've been on the other side for training people. I'd say ultimately it's not for me. I'm like, my calling is to help folks who want to do that kind of stepping up in order to ultimately be in the weeds and do a lot of policy work. But I'm the storyteller. I'm not the policy person.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, though. Like, I mean, even to have, like, to step out and because you did talk about, like, preparing for potentially running for office. So that gives me a better understanding, too, of kind of what you were doing and presenting there. But
there's a public facing part. There's a public facing part of the Emerge training program because we were all being like promoted by Emerge. And it was a class of 55 of us from up and down the coast in California. And like, what a gift to be involved in that. But I also partly did it in order to help myself get some clarity. And so I'm being honest that I got some clarity.
I mean, that's amazing to me. I personally feel very, very similarly. Like, I've definitely considered going down that road for a lot of reasons. But I've like have ultimately decided that like my activism fits in better into other pockets. Like, maybe if I hadn't had kids, I would consider it. But I feel like that's not like mixing those lifestyles is not it for me. I feel like I can be of more service elsewhere.
I have an incredible friend who has a book that just came out this year called Erased. The subtitle is something about American patriarchy, and it's very, very provocative. Her name is Anna Malaika Tubbs, and we're pals in L.A. in the sort of like, you know, author/activist circle. And she's the one who said her husband is running for office. And she's the one who said, you know, he's determined to use policy to make change. And I am determined to tell stories to make change. And, you know, of course, we can be a little bit wary of any kind of binary like that. There are other ways than just those two. But I loved that so much to help me in my own decision making when I was like, these are not my strengths. I'm not an in the weeds details person. I'm like a big dreamer. Again, don't, you know, if anyone listening feels like you're both, wonderful. Like, we don't need false binaries at all. But for me, man, that was helpful. And like permission, it was permission. And, you know, for those of you who are listening and not watching, the word permission is on the cover of my book 6 times. And the spirit of permission, which I didn't really know when I started writing the book, it just felt right. But I realized through writing it and through coaching people and through, you know, interacting with readers over the years, that this idea of permission is not like a permission slip. It's not like somebody from the outside being like, yes, you may enter. It's how we treat ourselves. It's an embodied feeling of freedom, of like, oh,
feeling myself, right?
And what happens on the other side of that, the way we communicate, the way we share our ideas, the way we ask for things we need, comes out differently when our body is like juiced up on that level of permission.
Oh, man. And like, and to have that dichotomy, to flip that when like, especially in the online business space, we see so much of that. Like, here's your permission slip. Like, if this is a thing that you need, like an external, like, but to have that be more of an embodied thing, that like, there's so much more power there.
Well, and in fact, part of, you know, I know that you're interested in the sort of evolution of my business. I rebranded and actually sort of announced the name of my business in January, because before that I had incorporated years prior, but never really used the business name because it was just sort of a stopgap. And what I ultimately named the business and announced in January is Permission Inc. First of all, is simple and clean and obviously carries through the spirit of permission. But second of all, the word nerd in me doesn't mind that it's not just Inc. as in, you know, it's an incorporated company, but also permission incorporated into the body. The word corp in there is body, right? And so what is it to actually embody a sense of permission? And also to go back real fast, because you said, you know, it can come from the outside and that's kind of a meme that we get. I also don't want to discount that is often part of our journey to feeling internal permission, right? To love on who in our own life have given us a sense of permission when perhaps we didn't totally believe in ourselves, right? Whether it was like a mentor or a parent or somebody in passing that we just like, we read the right thing at the right moment and it hit. And we were like, you know, fuck it. Why have I been holding back?
That is so beautiful. Okay. So transitioning a little bit more into the business landscape as it is right now, 2025 has been a different sort of year for many of us. I'm curious how it's gone for you and kind of what you're seeing as far as like trends and opportunities in the space.
I am going to admit that I don't know at all. I think this is such a fabulous and terrifying moment where no one knows the rules. So I certainly don't want to pretend that I do. But I will say that for myself, it has been surprisingly good, despite how chaotic everything feels and everyone feels, simply by claiming what I do, finding my people. In this case, what I really even mean by my people, beyond, you know, my readership and anybody who is like looking to uplevel their own, you know, relationship to public speaking, is corporations, like the companies that are out there that actually care about creativity and bravery, or the people inside of them who do, and their own relationship to their leadership. So I'm talking about, you know, people who are being groomed to be the CEO, or people who are in a middle level, but who are, you know, being given more responsibility, and who are seeing that it's not just a chance to have a better paycheck or a better title, but to actually claim power in a new way. In a new way to them, and in a new way perhaps than their, you know, the norms in their company. And that's really exciting and so fertile. And so I get to go in and help people on their upcoming talks. Like the deliverable is like, there's a speech coming up, there's a big presentation to the board, there's a, you know, the company's first trip to Con Lions, and what kind of a splash do we want to make? Like, it's some sort of a thing, and the thing is the Trojan horse for us to work on the stuff they actually want to work on. And sometimes they don't even know they actually want to work on, which is like a real shakeup of their approach to public speaking, period, to how they show up when they show up, how they connect with employees, or sometimes, you know, to the public if they're doing like media. Like, what even is it to show up today as a leader in this world? What is the, you know, of course we can talk about how depressing some of the leadership is that we see, but the other way we can talk about this is what is possible in our own lives when we flex our own leadership muscle. And when we decide, like, the way that we have all been taught to sound like an authority figure sucks. Doesn't work. Doesn't work for our bodies. Doesn't work for our friends. Doesn't work for our community building. Doesn't work for the loneliness epidemic. So what does? And of course, there's like books about leadership, but I'm honing in on this one part of it, which is, what do we sound like when we talk out loud? And how is that leadership? And often when we, you know, breathe into some curiosity around that, some mischief, as I like to put it, little playful rule breaking, we realize like so many of the rules and so much of the advice that we've been given for, one could say decades, but one could also say like millennia, is just outdated. And actually, I'll say this too, what ends up working on us when we're like reading, or not reading, I should say, like scrolling, or, you know, watching something that goes viral, what works on us is already playing with a lot of those rules. You know, like we were told, don't get emotional and keep your voice low or you'll lose all credibility. Sure, boring speeches don't go viral. And anytime someone gets emotional, whether, you know, it's crying or even like hopeful or pissed, that's what stands out. And advertisers have known this forever, right? Things that are emotionally fraught, emotionally hot, stick. But we've been told for so long not to be. And we know, of course, I mean, this gets really, really nuanced. And we know that in certain work environments, in certain spaces, we can be penalized for being, quote unquote, emotional. So the book, obviously, like, it goes into so much of that. And I don't mean to make it, you know, sound like a Pollyanna here and just be like, be emotional and everything will be great. But I am saying that, like, this is such a fruitful place to start asking questions about who set up those rules? Who do they help? Do they help us? Do they help me? Do they help my daughter? Do they help my son? Do they help the world I would like to live in? If not, what else is possible?
Because
you asked me about the state of business, and I'm like, let's talk about what's possible. I don't know the state of business. I had to make a big decision about B2C versus B2B, just for my own sort of sanity in simplifying. And for me, it's been really, really helpful to do B2B and know that that's where the heart of my business is. And then get to do some B2C when I have the chance, and knowing that that's not really, you know, like a huge revenue stream.
Right.
Which is partly connected to what I said earlier about scale also, because actually it's saner for me, and I can do my best work if I let go of the idea of scaling. If I trust the book, the ideas in it, and the spirit of spreading permission is what's scalable. But me, for now, like, God knows there's future iterations that live in my brain, but for now, I'm doing the opposite of scaling. Like, my volume is really low, and I get to work with individuals like really all up in their business and trust that they're turning around and scaling.
That is such an interesting way to approach that conversation, because you're definitely not the first person to come up against that, especially on the heels of a really successful book. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious, how you sat with that question. Like, as you were, like, while you were in the thick of it, what helped you decide, you know what, actually, I love being this kind of service provider versus being the, you know, the face for this thing and doing that whole, you know, song and dance over here?
Yeah. I think I'm going to answer this less personally and more kind of like invitation for all of us, because I think that that's what I found, actually, that we are all, maybe I'll answer it like Taylor Swift. We're all going through eras, you guys. And it's okay. It's okay to decide you're in an era that's less visible, where you just kind of want to be head down and doing the work. And I felt, for example, like as the election of the end of 2024 rolled out and we kind of were all feeling some kind of way, as people say.
Kind of way.
That I deliberately, and maybe you're feeling this too, and so I am saying, like, welcome. I deliberately felt like I did not do myself a service by setting myself up as somebody who had to be responsible for processing in real time and having hot takes. And some people really thrive on that. And I am a queen of nuance. And I really care about, like, the deep human stuff underneath and not just, like, the snazzy little, like, clever line. And so I decided to, you know, follow my nose on that and really work with people over time so that we could do that kind of really human work instead of what the internet sometimes makes us feel like we have to do. And the other way of answering that is, in a way, I came back to my roots with coaching actors, because those, the best, I would do little one-offs, like coach somebody for an hour on a, you know, Western Texas accent for an audition, you know, sure. For the most part, and the work from that era of my life that really stuck with me were these long engagements, 6 months in New Orleans coaching my actor on a TV show, and every episode, same accent, but, you know, new emotional arc for the character, new lines, new whatever, and being there with them for that and really letting the sort of breath happen, the breath of experience. That's what I'm now back to with my leaders. And, like, yeah, we do a talk and the talk happens and we debrief and, you know, we could call it a day. But that's not really the thing. It's like, oh, oops, there's a new challenge, new opportunity, new growth, new up level. I'm here. I'm still here. And that in a way required that I turn a little bit away from the public and a little bit more private.
I think a lot of people could have deeply, deeply benefited from having that level of self-awareness.
I mean, it has left me feeling sometimes like I'm abandoning people. Like, it's a complicated feeling. I've never really talked about this the way, like, publicly. So thank you for, you know, offering the forum for it, you know. But, like, that's why I say that the book is what scales and the spirit of permission is what scales. Because the activist in me that just wants to, like, offer, you know, touches on business level.
Yeah.
To the most people, you know, I have the book for that. I have showing up in places like this. I have a Substack that's basically free for $8 a month. You can join the, you know, sort of inner circle and do monthly Q&As with me for a higher touch. But, you know, the point is that, like, that still exists. And so I had to, yeah, talk to myself and say, that's enough. And then go over here and explore what it is to really have these long-term relationships with leaders who are changing the world.
God, I'm obsessed with this on just every level. I have absolutely experienced something similar. Like, I've very much backed off of feeling like I need to show up digitally in a specific way, especially in times of high conflict. Like, it's not about wanting to recede, but I know for sure where my efforts make the most difference. Like, today, like, right after we wrap this conversation, I'm heading into Portland to go and volunteer at Feed the Mass. It's my favorite nonprofit in the Portland area. They're focused on feeding people, especially right now, as ICE is, like, you know, screwing our community just like everybody else is, because we know some of those folks are afraid to leave home right now so we can go leave meals on their door. Like, I feel so good about that. I feel so unconflicted about the choices that I'm making by doing that, by growing food in my backyard and distributing it, like, things like that. I know that locally, like, for me, that's where it's at. And nobody needs another fucking hot take. Like, we got plenty. Like,
and listen, I'm celebrating you. Thank you for sharing that. I hope it inspires everybody else, myself included. I just want to name that I wrote a book about speaking. Some people interpret it as speaking up. And that what we are talking about is sometimes choosing not to.
Right.
And I feel like there's so much to talk about inside of that. Like there's so many big feelings people are having right now around like the virtue signaling of, but I have to speak up or I will seem like I'm a bad person. And that we get to just tell ourselves, I'm unsubscribing from that like show up culture where I have to show up in a certain way for a certain group of people in order to like justify that I'm a good person. And it really helps us to focus on what the book really is about, what my work really is about, what I think a lot of us are really grappling with, which is what is the kind of speaking that matters the most? What's not being said? What are ideas that I have from the inside of me that could come out, right? Rather than, yes, the billion and fifth hot take that is a version of someone else's something else, something else, something else, but rather like quality over quantity.
I feel like that's just like a perfect segue to like, I end all of these interviews the same here. And I want to make sure I'm respecting your time. So to kind of close things out here, I would love to know, like, what is referral worthy to you?
You know, it's a feeling, right? I mean, it's the same with good speech giving. It's not like, wow, I really liked their argument. It's, God, I just felt so good in their presence. I felt so taken care of. I felt such a sense of possibility. And we refer people when we have that feeling. We just felt held. I'm big on, especially having worked with a lot of movie stars and a lot of people who on paper just seem like, you know, they should be the most sort of successful and secure people ever. We're all just people with a little bit of a bruised nervous system wanting to feel a sense of belonging and purpose. And so when we do that for each other, you know, I suppose we become referral worthy.
Mm-hmm. Samara, thank you so much, so, so much for this time and for gifting all of us with your presence. It really, like, I have been looking forward to this for weeks. If you have not gotten your copy of Permission to Speak, it's getting reprinted here soon. So best be ordering a copy. Yeah. Just thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Dusty. You're wonderful.
You've been listening to Referral Worthy. If you're ready to get more business from the clients who already love you, you need my Client Experience Pack. It's a collection of templates designed to help you create a referral-worthy experience from first touch to final invoice. Find it at thereinvention.co/CEP.